1040JC.
N4DJC, W4DJW. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Dave, how did everything go yesterday? I talked to David a little bit, and he said it might have been a little breezy, but the weather was absolutely gorgeous.
Well, it would be really calm for a minute, and then the next thing you know, the wind would be blowing, and it was some icy air coming in, some cold air. I did get a few flights in, but I didn't stay out there flying as long as normal because it was chilly. Steve brought his stuff out there. He was starting to get it set up, and his wife called. She hurt her foot out in the yard, so he had to drop everything, go back and get her. I took the week off this week. We're planning to go back Tuesday, tomorrow, I guess, if the weather's decent. But we saw a pattern airplane out there, unlike any pattern airplane I've ever seen. When you're standing up next to it, it's probably a little over your knee high. It's tall. It's big. And the wings are really, really short on it. And it's got like three wings, two miniature wings above and below the main wing. And then the main wing, which is very short and stubby, but a really wide fuselage, tall and narrow, tall and skinny fuselage. Looks like a plank of wood about 2 feet tall by about 6 feet long and carved out like a fish. Looks like a guppy flying through the air. Have you seen those? That's a new style pattern plane.
Sounds interesting, Dave. I've always wondered if anybody, you know, the pattern planes for years stay pretty much consistent with the sizes and the designs, and that sounds like something kind of outside the box.
It's way outside the box. It's nothing like they used to be. And he took it up. It had two props, too. They're counter-rotating two-bladed props. I don't know if they're aerial pitch or not. I don't think they are. But they rotate in opposite directions to eliminate the P factor, you know, the swirl of the air going around the fuselage wanting it to twist. So I asked him about that. I was kind of suspected that's what it might be, but he said, yeah, that's what it was for. And he flew it several times. And it was big enough that when it's out in the sky, you can see it really big. It looks like it's flying slow, even though it's going pretty fast. And no matter what angle he turned it, it looked like it was flying through molasses. He could do slow rolls. He could do knife edge. He could do whatever he wanted to do, put it anywhere he wanted to put it. I mean, it was like the ultimate in pattern flying. It's like you're flying through molasses, and you can adjust it to be exactly the way you want it as it's going through the air. It was a pretty cool airplane. But, man, it looked like something out of this world.
Sounds like that big fuselage may have something to do with that, although I don't know aerodynamics well enough to know if that's the case or not, but I know that David was telling me that I guess he was talking about that particular airplane, I suppose, because he said it would he could stand it up on his tail and do knife edges, you know, just not too far off the ground. I said, wow, I've seen people do knife edges, but that sounds like that's a real interesting concept for a pattern plane.
I told him, the guy that was flying it, I told him that looked like it was on a flight controller, and he said, thank you. Which meant it wasn't on a flight controller. That was all him doing it. But more than him doing it, I think it was the airplane. And I think you're right. I think it's that really tall fuselage, really narrow, probably about, on average about 2 to 3 inches wide, but has some wide spots for where you put the radio gear, for example, or where the wings bolt on so that it gives the wings some structural integrity. So it's a little bit wider in those areas. But in other areas, like behind the wing and the rudder and all that stuff, it would be like the fuselage was a huge rudder that was flying through the sky, right? And if you turned it on its side for doing knife edge, it probably had more wing area than the wings. But it was long and skinny for when it was on its knife edge. It would be a long, narrow wing rather than a short wing, or rather than a widening wing with a short cord. It'd be like a really short wing with a really, really long cord, the whole length of the fuselage. It was really cool. I enjoyed watching that more than just Eric Myers was out there. He's like part of Horizon Hobbies, who sold his shares out of Horizon Hobbies, so he's got any kind of airplane you want. He was out there with his jets that burn kerosene and some other really fast airplanes. But this one guy was more interesting than all his airplanes, right? I've never thought Pattern would go in that direction. But I asked him, I said, well, is that normal for Pattern these days? Is that what Pattern looks like? And he said, yeah, it's changed that much. It's that drastic of a change over the years.
Not being able to visualize it correctly. I know you recall the old control line stunt planes. You know, that most the best ones were always had were profile fuselages, were just wide enough to put the motor on and that sort of thing. And then it was all wing, kind of like not like a combat plane, but you know, like a control line stunt plane, Ringmasters. And you know, they were always profile. And those things flew great. I mean, they could do about anything. But they had those big, wide wings, which is not the same. You know, not apples and oranges. I mean, not the same as what you're talking about. But that's really interesting. Only 2 or 3 inches wide. That's pretty incredible. I'm gonna have to get on the web and take a look at that. And by the way, I've been looking at the Mavic Mini 2 Flymore kits, and I think that's probably the way I'm going to go.
That is a very good way to go. I didn't have that option because I had no idea my wife was purchasing one. She just bought the Mavic Mini, and then I had to go back and buy the Flymore package that did not include the Mavic Mini, which was more expensive in the end. If you just start from the go, so that you'll have 3 batteries, and you'll always have, you know, you can have 2 charging while one is flying. Then you can fly as much as you want. You don't have, like when she got mine, it came with 1 battery, right? Well, I didn't know I was getting it. Well, it has the little 5-volt USB-C, mini USB connector thing that charges it. And it takes like 5 or 6 or 8 hours to charge 1 battery. And it works. It get it done. You can fly. But you can only fly for a half hour once every 8 hours. Whereas if you get the other charger, it'll charge them in an hour. And it'll charge 3 of them in an hour. And so it'll charge them faster than you can discharge them. So that is, I mean, you're doing the right thing. You're doing your research.
The Mini, they had a good price on the Mini, which had a couple extra batteries with it. But the other, but looking at the Mini too, it just a whole lot, you know, had a whole lot more features on it for the money, I thought. And, you know, handicapping yourself with 1 battery, and once you can get, you know, that's really, it sounded like a pretty good deal to me. It was only about, I think it's about $100 more or something like that, if that much. But it sounded like the good deal, and I downloaded the app on my iPad just to take a look at some of the things. And it looks like it's not going to be, you know, once you get the lay of the land and get all the settings right as far as how you want, you know, restricting altitude and that sort of thing. It looked like it may not be terribly difficult to fly.
If you've flown Pattern planes or just regular fun fly planes or trainers or helped anybody learn, you won't have a problem with it at all. It took me a while before I put it in sport mode, but that was really unnecessary. You could start off with that. It's got, like, that one's got 3 modes. It's got C for cinematic view, which everything happens really slow. Right, and if you're trying to correct for something going wrong really fast, it's not going to happen really fast. It's going to happen really slow. So you got to keep that in mind too, if you're going to get close to something. And then it's got P, which is like in the middle. I don't know what P stands for. And then it's got S for sport. So C, cinematic, P for normal everyday flying, and sport for if you want to do 30 miles an hour and above, you got to kick it into sport. But in any of those modes, when you get in trouble, if you just let your hands off of it and you just look through the viewer, which is your smartphone, and see what you're pointed at, and then just rotate it to wherever you wanted it pointed, and then push forward on the right stick, it's going to come back at you, or wherever you point it. It's really easy. And then the left stick, you know, the throttle stick brings it down close to the earth. Yeah, it's not like a regular RC transmitter, where the throttle stick is all the way down all the time until you bring it up to go fast. It's always in the middle. So, and when you push it up, it goes up. And when you pull it back, it comes down. That's the only thing different than your regular RC transmitter that you're used to. But yeah, once you get used to it, let go of it if you get in trouble, take time to regroup, and then go back at it again. It'll sit there and wait on you.
they're looking at it. Once you get it launched, you get it up there. I mean, wherever you leave it at, that's where it sits at from what I'm seeing. But that may not be correct. But then you can just move it. I think you can limit the speed of it as well, based on what I saw, the height and the distance from, you know, how far out you want to go with it, how high you want to go with it. And I think you can limit the speed too, unless I may have been something else, but it was just it's just a normal mode, I guess. I saw the three modes. I didn't understand the cinematic mode, but I saw that they were starting out on the normal mode in the middle. And it looked incredibly, it looked almost too easy, I suppose. I'm sure if you get fancy with it, you can get into trouble. But it'd be real, I just thought that was really interesting. It seemed like it's something I'd really enjoy in my... And since you don't need a whole lot of, I mean, you don't have to have you don't have to have much of a landing space at all for it. You just got to know your terrain.
That's true. And my backyard, it used to be totally covered with trees. Now I've cut a lot of them out. But even with that, it's still not that big of a hole in the ground when you're flying over it. And I can, if I've flown away and I'm coming back, I can point the camera straight down. And I can line it up right over the spot where I want it to come down at. And then I just pull the throttle stick all the way back. And it comes down through between all the trees, doesn't hit anything. Even goes past my W5GI mystery antenna. You can watch it go by as it's descending. The antenna is ascending. It's pretty cool to watch it do that. But, and then you can put it down wherever you want it. And precision. I mean, you're within a foot or two. And it'll even tell you the distance off center from where it got its home point. So what I do is take off and I fly out of the back sunroom, turn around 180 degrees and fly down behind it, and then I sit there to wait for it to get a GPS lock. It'll go up to like 20 or 30 feet, and it'll sit right there. It won't go any higher than that until it gets a GPS lock. And once it gets a GPS lock, it sets home point. So you can fly back to within a foot of where you took off, and then just descend like you're in an elevator, it comes straight down. Yeah, and if there is anything that's too simple to fly, it is too simple to fly.
About 80 by 80 in the back, 70 by 80 or something like that, no trees in it. I've just got power lines. You have telephone poles on two sides with power lines, but everything else is nothing in the front at all. But I don't know whether I'll do it. You know, I probably tried, someplace out in the open to begin with. But I just thought the way to see and land was really interesting. I said, man, I said, that takes a, I said, landing, taking off's not a problem with most RC planes, except the one that Dave was saying about somebody yesterday took off and made a left turn or something, ran into a building. I said, taking off is usually not a problem with the RC plane, but landing can be a problem. And if it takes some of the excitement out of landing, that may be a good thing for an old guy like me.
It is. In fact, most of the time, I'll bring it down to about 13 feet off the ground, 14 feet off the ground. Then I fly over the deck, and then I turn it around to point it away from the door. I open the door. I hold my hand out. I back it up over my hand, and then I pull the throttle all the way down, and it just sets down in my hand. And then when it shuts down, the prop starts spinning. It stops spinning. I just bring it in the door and I shut the door. I'm done. I never even take a step out on the back deck. I fly it right up to the back door and land it in my hand. That's how easy it is.
That sounds better. Well, you talk about the itch of my finger gets on the add to cart, but I noticed the three batteries, and I also noticed too that when you plug your smartphone in, that it. It keeps the smartphone charged as well. Is that correct, or am I not reading that correctly?
So there's three. Well, some of them, I think that new one, I think the two has that capability. I was reading about what mine's a one, or it doesn't say. Mine's just a Mavic Mini. It wasn't called a Mavic Mini one. They didn't know they were going to build a two. But then they found out some things about the one that they didn't like, so they made the two. I was reading about it, and I saw where it would charge your phone, because that controller has a ton of juice. I only charge my controller once every other month or something like that, and I charge those batteries every flight, and I keep three of them charged up all the time. I didn't get the charger that they have there, That charger has got one drawback in that it will charge those batteries serially. It won't charge them in parallel. There is another battery out, battery charger for that same multirotor that will charge three of them in parallel, plus your cell phone, plus the controller, all at the same time. So if you get them all drained out, you can charge them all back up at the same time. The one that has the three holders for the battery in a row that you slide it down into, that's the one DJI makes. That one's got a little bit of a drawback in that it'll only charge them serially. But I mean, if that's good enough for you, it's kind of convenient because it holds the battery in place while it's charging it. Whereas these other ones has like four wires that come out, and they're clips that clip on the battery. And you can see an LED turns amber while it's charging and turns green when it's fully charged. And then it's got two USB connections, one for your controller and one for your cell phone. So you've got some options there. You've got some choices to make. W4DJW.
Hey, Friday. Well, I noticed that this little game charger that they had, I didn't notice what it was. I figured it was probably serial. But did you actually get 25 or so minutes out of each charge, Dave, or is that exaggeration?
No, that's not an exaggeration. They will do that. Now, in a windy day, when you're having to fight wind to stay, you know, in position the whole time, it's going to use more power than on a calm day where it's just hovering and it's not doing any battling against the wind. So that, on a calm day, I bring it back long before it's out of juice because I'm used to the Spark. The Spark is the predecessor to that for that size that DJI has. That's one my wife bought for me, too. I've had it for probably 5 or 6, 7 years. And it will only do 15 minutes. So you got to get out there, get it done, and get home and get back on the ground. And I'm just, that's my mentality now. So, and once in a while I think, you know what, I don't have to be in such a big hurry. I can take my time. And so I'll go do one thing. And what I would have come in and got another battery to do, I'll go do it too on that same battery. And then I'll come back and land. But that 250 grams being that light really makes that battery last a long time.
Well, that sounds really good, and that sounds like I'm glad there's somebody around that I can ask about those things because they're not inexpensive, but when you look at what you're getting, though, you get something you pay probably a couple of $1,000s for, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, I guess. And not only that, there's a lot of math there, and it just didn't look like it was very hard to, based on the setup, didn't look like it was very hard to set up. You didn't have to do any balancing act or any of that sort of thing to do it. From what I saw of it, you know, once you launch it and hit it, it'll just, you know, go up to a certain spot, just sit there and hover till you decide, you know, which way you want to go. And as long as you limit the speed to it to begin with, I mean, if it's going 30 miles an hour, is pretty fast for a drone that size. See, 30, it's one of those deals like when you find a pattern plane, you think, you know, they fly 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. It doesn't sound very fast. It's real fast. It's real fast if you have to make corrections all along, too.
That's true. That's true. It is very fast. Once you get used to flying by looking at what the pilot sees, once you get used to that, it's hard to go back to flying being a third party observer, right, where your feet are on the ground, it's in the air, and you're doing hand-eye coordination through the air. Looking out the front of it or looking straight down or looking at a 45-degree angle at what's in front of you is a whole lot easier to fly than it is standing on the sidelines and flying it. So you're going to notice that right off the bat. It'll spoil you. When I started doing this, when Michael was here, the guy that was the German engineer for BMW, when I started flying with him and we started doing Follow Me and we flew with goggles on, I got lazy. I did not want to fly standing at the flight line anymore and being a third-party observer and watching the airplane fly. I wanted to be inside the airplane, and that's what those goggles afforded me. And that's the same way when you're looking through that, when you're looking through your smartphone, it's kind of like the goggles, right? And hey, those things are so small, you can't see what they're doing once they get a couple hundred feet away from you anyway.
It's kind of kind of the thing that amazed me. I thought that, I said, you know, use a smartphone. I've seen, probably 7 or 8 years ago, you could buy the larger drones, and they had the, you could hook the smartphone up and use just a smartphone to fly them. I said, that's not a good idea because, you lose that, you don't have much of a, you don't have enough power, to be able to control it from, very far away. Otherwise, it's going to get lost and, be gone, and it'll be headed out somewhere, and you won't be able to stop it. But when I saw the ones in combination with the transmitter, I said, that makes sense. And plus, being able to see where you're going, rather than looking up in the sky, I mean, it's probably a hard habit to break, but looking up in the sky to see where the drone is. But basically, what you're doing is you're just looking for yourself through the drone's eyes, rather than if it's coming back towards you. Do I turn it right or left? Opposite. That was always one of the hardest things for me to remember until the guy told me, said, if the wing dips right, is you just remember you're going in the opposite direction with an RC plane. But that takes a lot of that. All the things you have to do in opposite from what you think you should be doing, it kind of takes that out of it. Since you're basically sitting, it's like being sitting inside the drone, and you're controlling from inside rather than looking at it from 150 feet away.
W4DJW, and as we get older, when it's out there, when it's at the end of the runway, or one and a half times the length of the runway away, and you're lining up for final, those wings are about 8 pixels wide, right? And so you're looking about 2 pixels going up one side and 2 pixels going up the other side, and you're making decisions based on those 3 or 4 pixels in your head. And that's tough. That's tough when you're younger. When you're a younger guy in your 20s, 30s, and even 40s, that's pretty simple, right? It's nothing to it. But when you get in your 60s and 70s, every pixel counts a whole lot more than it used to. So when you put those goggles on, all of that is totally 100% gone, right? That is no longer an issue. It doesn't matter how old you are. Everybody's on an even playing field then, because that video is coming back to you, and you're seeing what it's seen. And you can lift your gimbal up and point your camera back at where you are and just push the stick forward, the right stick, and it'll come right back to you, no matter where it is. Right, even on some of the heads-up displays they've got, and this one does too, the one you're looking at, it has this on its heads-up display. You'll just have to find it and get used to how it works. But it has an artificial horizon, so you can see when the wings are leaning to one direction really hard, trying to maintain position, and you can know at that point that it's got a lot of wind blowing wherever it is. 400 feet is totally different than down here on the ground. And then you can just, raise your head up, find where you are. Some of them have an arrow that point back to where home is, so you can just rotate it around until that arrow is pointed at H. When the arrow is pointed at H, you just stick the stick forward, and it's coming back to you, no matter where it was. The only problem that you get into is when that video goes away and it's totally gone. Then you got to know where the return to home button is.
The learning experience, I'm sure. The whole thing is just amazing to me after being out of flying for so many years and kind of dabbling here and there and looking into it and thought, well, maybe I did, but maybe now's the right time to get back into at least this part of it. I don't think my coordination and my reflexes are good enough to fly fixed wing again, but this sounds like something I might be able to handle and not have a real, real steep learning curve on.
It is. You're making the right decision. I mean, getting back into it, that made it easy for me. I started doing that, and I'd go up. And that's another thing I was going to tell you. The Mavic Mini is so good that they don't put some of the features in it that come in the full-blown Mavic or the other, like the Spark, was considered a full-blown Mini. And it's got programmable capabilities where I can take it up and I can say, okay, do a 360-degree panorama, and it'll take 46 pictures. It'll rotate the body, and then it'll rotate the gimbal for the camera, and it'll take a picture. And it'll rotate the gimbal, picture, and then rotate the body again and do three more, and then rotate the body again and do three more, rotating the camera between it. And when it gets done, it's got 46 pictures that define the inside of a sphere, That's everything that it can see in 360 degrees, up and down, left and right, forward and backward. And you can come down and with some software, you can stitch all that into a 360 degree picture. The Mavic Mini doesn't have that. They didn't put that in there. I hate it, but you can do the same thing. You can go up and you can rotate it and take a picture, rotate it. So what I do is I go up, I rotate the gimbal straight down. I rotate it to east, I take a picture. I rotate it south, take a picture. So rotate it west, take a picture. Rotate it north, take a picture. And then I bring the gimbal up 30 degrees. And I rotate it instead of 90 degree segments, 45 degree segments, and take a picture. Then I bring it up another 30 degrees, the gimbal. And I go 8 more pictures and rotate it up another 30 degrees and do 8 more pictures and then rotate it up to the horizon. And then you've got like 36 pictures instead of 46, but they do the same thing. You can stitch them together. So you can get around it, but boy, is it easy for that Spark just to say, push up one button and it does all the work. I leave it. I'll set the controller down on the couch and I'll leave. I'll go close the back door or I'll go, take something upstairs and come back and it's still doing its work. So the Mavic Mini doesn't have those kinds of things on it that the other ones do, but you can improvise. W4DJW.
4DJC Friday. Yeah, I mean, I heard you talking, talking a month ago about stitching the photos together, and I haven't gone deep enough into this yet to know whether the Mini 2 has that capability, already built in or not. But it may have. But it's got I think it's got like a 4K video, maybe even be higher than that. But it just looked like a sweet spot. The other thing is just so small. I was amazed how small. I mean, that thing is tiny. Most of the ones that were that small in the past were like these these little $25 deals. But that thing is tiny. It's not very big at all. But it still meets that 250 gram maximum, so you don't have to do the FCC license thing. Is that correct? I am thinking correctly about that, am I not?
You are, but one word of warning, because a lot of people ask that same question. So the FAA, not the FCC, the FAA has declared that anything that's less than 250 grams is, you don't have to register it. But you have to have, if you're going to fly in FAA airspace, period, and that even includes flying inside your own house, right? Anytime you're not connected to the ground and you're over the United States, you're in FAA airspace, right? Your backyard, the air in your backyard isn't yours, even though you may believe it is. But the guys have been arrested for not believing that. So, you do have to still follow the rules, right? In other words, but the rules aren't as stringent when you're less than 250 grams. Like, for example, you can't take a 250-gram multirotor and fly it over the White House, right? You can't do that. You can't fly anything over the White House, no matter how big or how little it was. You can't fly a mosquito over the White House. So those kinds of things, you still have to honor the rules and respect them and obey them and know what they are and know not to do them. Like 400 feet, even though it doesn't have to be registered, means you're still limited to 400 feet. You still can't fly within 4 miles of an airport without letting the tower know that you're going to do it and getting a flight plan approved. So things like that. How is that different than one that weighs more than 250 grams? Is one that weighs more than 250 grams, there's two different options for that. One is you're a hobbyist like we are, or one is you're commercial. If you pass your Part 107, you have to register them, right, to be able to fly them, if you have passed your Part 107, because that means you're going to fly commercial. So now it's not just enough to register you. You have to register you and all of your airplanes once you go that route. Otherwise, if you don't pass Part 107 and you are above 250 grams, you have to be really, really careful about what you're doing with that, right? You have to go out to the airfield, fly at the airfield, and that's it. Don't do anything else. Don't be posting on YouTube pictures of things that you took that aren't at the airfield, or the FAA will reach out and tap you on the shoulder and ask you what you're doing.
Which, for the under 250 grams, which FAA license do you have? Do you need that? Do you just need to register the device, or what's the deal with that now exactly?
So to fly at all, even to fly at the airfield, right, 150 grams or less or more, doesn't matter. To fly at all, you have to be registered with the FAA now, today. All right, that's a new rule. And that's registered as a UAV, unmanned aerial vehicle, UAV operator. Okay, so, and I did mine a long time ago, and I just registered, just re-upped it because it expired. I think it expires every 2 years ago. So I did mine 2 years ago, and I did it again this past January. You have to do that, period, right, regardless of what you fly. And then if you want to do more than just go out to the airfield and fly your airplanes 250 grams more or less, right, doesn't matter, you can use that registration for you, and you don't have to register any of your airplanes. Right, that's just for you to be able to fly. Right now, the 250 gram rule is, I don't think you have to get that license to be able. You don't have to register yourself but you still have to follow the rules. Right, so you don't have. But if it's going to be above 250 grams, you do have to register yourself to be able to fly it at all. And now, if you want to be able to, like, post a video on YouTube and turn on the commercials so that you get monetary gain out of it, then you have to pass your Part 107, right? If you're going to be, like, taking pictures of, you know, some spectacular sight, right, to the Grand Canyon or something, although you can't fly it in national parks, right, so can't get those kind of pictures. But if you can get pictures and you're going to make money off of it, like, for example, doing 3D, three-dimensional models of cell towers and selling that three-dimensional model to a cell company, then you have to have your Part 107. And once you get your Part 107, you have to register everything you have that flies, regardless of how much it weighs. Does that help?
That's exactly what I needed to know. And, but listen, thanks so much for taking time to get his explanations on those. I want to make sure I was going the right direction on the drone, and also, you know, getting everything lined up so I get registered with the FAA and what all is entailed in that. But I think that's the route I'm going to go, and I'll make a decision over the next couple of days. But it's supposed to be gorgeous tomorrow, I think, Dave, tomorrow and Wednesday. I think it's going to be like in the 60s. And maybe if the wind ends up, you ought to be able, since you're not, if you're off this week, you sure ought to be off tomorrow and Wednesday, because I think those are the 2 days, or maybe Wednesday and Thursday, a couple of days of which early in the midweek are supposed to be really nice.
That's what we heard. That's what the guy that was flying that pattern plane was telling us, Steve and myself. So, and I think I found that pattern plane. I don't know if this is it or not, but it looks like it. So, have you got anything to write anything down with, or have you got a computer close by with a keyboard and a notepad?
I've got a pencil here, but I don't know if I've got anything to. Yeah, go ahead and give me the. Go ahead and give it to me. I got something to write with here.
Okay, I found it. It's called a OREKA. That's the name of it. OREKA, Orca. And that's how you spell it. OREKA. F3A. That's Foxtrot 3 Alpha. F3A pattern plane. Orca F3A pattern plane. Google that and click the first one that comes up on the link. And I believe that's the one we were looking at. And then once you bring that up, you can click on the little picture of it, and it'll bring up an array, a 3x3 plus one, a 10 picture array that you can go through and just inspect it from all different angles. That is the coolest thing. It has a very, very slight resemblance to what pattern planes used to look like, but it doesn't look anything like a Newton, like the old pattern planes we're used to.
Dan, I don't have the computer upstairs with me right now, but when I walk downstairs in a minute, I'll have to look it up and give it once over, because it sounds really interesting. Dave, I'm going to let you go. My wife just ran down to Walmart to pick up a couple of items. She should be back, and I hope she's going to cook me a pizza pretty soon for lunch. And But I'll talk to you again. I'll be checking into that this evening, I guess, but maybe I'll catch you this a little bit later on this afternoon. Have a great day, and listen, I really appreciate all the information. That was a huge help to me. W4DJW, N4DJC, clear after you.
Okay, Jerry, and recognizing somebody that came in with you there at the very beginning, pick you up in just a minute. Yeah, any time, and I know that's probably drinking from a fire hose because I'm trying to tell you everything that can come into my head at any one single time. So if you forget some of it, or I wasn't clear on some of it, you know, don't hesitate to ask again. I don't mind at all. Enjoy your pizza. Hope you get one soon. There's another station breaking in there. Go ahead, W4DJW.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. KO4LAO, Jim over at Traveler's Rest. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, Jim. Doing good. First day of two-week vacation. How much better can it get?
That's pretty awesome. Looks like we're going to have some nice weather in the other next couple of days here. Hey, for M4DJC, if I got that right, Jerry, let me make a recommendation for you. I just got through sitting in on a FAA drone professional seminar here a couple of nights ago. The way the FAA is looking at this now is they presume you're flying under Part 107 unless you are meeting all of the 8 conditions for the exception for recreational flyers. Make a recommendation to you. There's an advisory circular called Advisory Circular 95-7, and it's just been rewritten. And it's got all the things that recreational guys need to know about operating under the new rules, covers registration and all that. A lot of the things that Dave was telling you there. But you got to meet all 8 conditions to be flying under recreational rules. Otherwise, they presume you're flying under Part 107. And I think effective, it's either the 1st or the 16th of March, local law enforcement guys can ask to see a copy of your photo ID, your drone registration, and your license if you're flying under Part 107.
And I think, Jim, they go further than that. I think he took off for lunch. I think Jerry took off for lunch. And that's in ND2J. I can't remember now that I'm thinking of having a senior moment, but I'll look up his call in a minute. But that's good to know. That's a good way to put it. You're presuming Part 107 until you prove otherwise. I suppose if you're flying, the easiest proof of that not to be is if you're flying an airfield and it's under 250 grams and you're not, you don't have any posts on YouTube. That would prove all 8, I'm thinking.
They're taking a whole different mindset of it now, and the presumption is you're flying under Part 107, you've got a license, unless you can show them that you're meeting all of those 8 conditions to fly under recreational rules. And so you have to be able to tell even a law enforcement guy now what rules you're operating under. And you should state those or have those or know those in mind before you go fly, because you can't switch back and forth.
And one of the things, when I was studying it, and I haven't been studying it recently, but one of the things I noticed too is that they have now apps that you can use to generate a flight plan. And you have to generate a flight plan. I mean, if you're going to fly somewhere that's not at an airfield, one of the things that a cop can also ask you for if you're not at an airfield is that flight plan that has been approved by the FAA. And I didn't dig into it too deeply, but it looked like you could build a flight plan, and you also have to have your pre-checklists and all that kind of stuff too. The same thing you would have to have if you're flying a full-scale airplane. You have to have your checklist, and you have to prove you went through your checklist. You have to have your flight plan, and it has to be an approved FAA flight plan for that day and time and location, is what I understood from what I was reading.
It's required. It's an ATC clearance. It's required if you're in controlled airspace. So if you're in Class G airspace, that's uncontrolled, you don't have to have it. You have to look. So if you go to the app, V4 you fly, so Bravo 4, Uniform, Foxtrot Lima Yankee, just type those apps, have that app on your phone. It will, in some areas, if you're in controlled airspace and you're a recreational flyer, so that means you're flying just for fun, and you want to fly in controlled airspace, you go to the Before You Fly app, and it will now let you use the LANT system, which is the Low Altitude Airspace Authorization Notification Capability. It's a mouthful. But it will give you what you need to fly. It will tell you whether or not you can fly there, and you'll get an ATC clearance. And so as long as you stay with those parameters. The other way that you do it is if you are flying as a recreational guy, what's called an FRIA, federally or an FAA recognized identification area. And some of those things are coming up here pretty soon. And so that would be our traditional AMA airfields that we fly at.
W4DJ's W. Yeah, it's changing a lot. Landscape's changing a lot. We got to study up on it. It's not like when I went out there, there's some guys as old as I am that were out there flying up at Campobello this past weekend. And they just take their planes out of the trunk of their car, get their transmitter, and go toss the airplane out on the ground and hit the throttle, and away they go. Those days are gone.
Mass AMA airfield, they're not, that's no problem. Because normally they're in Class G airspace, which means it's unregulated and uncontrolled, and you're only supposed to go up to 400 feet, recreational or commercial, either way, unless you're close to a tower or a structure. But either way, those guys are probably going to be okay for a little while, but we're waiting right now, the company that I work for, we're waiting on the FAA to release documents before the 1st of March that tells what the new rules are. And even talks about night flying and that kind of stuff. If you were flying under 107, you could apply for a daytime waiver to fly at night. But they've stopped all those. And their new rules come to effect the 1st of, they release the information the 1st of March, but they don't go into effect until the 16th of March. So you may know about it, but you can't do it until the 16th.
Or it can't be held against you until the 16th. I guess that could go either way. I don't know. I guess I did. One of the guys that I was reading from that does this a lot already, and he's really up to speed on it, was that a cop did come out to him one time while he was flying, and he had his checklist and he had everything in order, everything that he was supposed to have in order, and he even had a printed up laminated sheet of paper that said, "Please don't, I followed the rules. I've applied for my flight plan. I've done this. I've done that." I showed all of that to the cop. And the cop still wanted him to give him his undivided attention right then and there and now, Johnny on the spot. "Stop looking at your airplane. Focus on me." And the paper clearly said, "I have to land the airplane, then I'll do whatever you want me to do." And the cop was being belligerent, right? Because even the officers don't know nowadays. They can't. It's more than they can keep up with, and they've got a large role in it. So he was saying, you can even do everything exactly right, and you can still get the wrong kind of cop and get in trouble for it. So best to have somebody else that can there with you, a spotter that can answer all the questions that the officer has while you're bringing it in and landing it, so that you can answer all their questions.
If you're flying commercially for a real commercial, if you're doing some type of job or any kind of work, I always recommend a visual observer, because it's just for that very reason right there. You can do everything right, but you may have a law enforcement guy that doesn't know the rules or may not remember all the stuff. But there's some liability that they can accept there, too, because you're a FAA licensed pilot at that point, and if they interfere with your flight and they weren't in the right, and you were following all the rules, then there's liability. If there's an issue, there's liability on that law enforcement officer's personal. They're personally liable then.
No, I didn't think about it that way. This other guy was he was upset because that happened, and rightfully so. I understand. I get upset. I was trying to think, well, how could you prove beyond a shadow of a doubt to somebody who really wasn't keeping up with the changes, right? And they have to assume authority. That's part of their job, right? They have to assume authority in situations where it's unknown, and you have to give them that benefit of the doubt. So that's one of those conditions that you can get yourself into that's really hard to get yourself out of if you're not careful. W4DJW.
Return to home button, and then turn around and face the officer and ask him what he wants.
Yeah, as long as you got enough juice to do that. I don't know. I'm sticking to airfields, right? And learning as much as I can without having to get into all of that before I branch out into all of that. But it's good to hear that other people are keeping up with it, and it's good to hear that the FAA actually listened to all of those letters that went to all the congressmen and went to them, their site themselves. It's good to hear that they listened because, boy, there for a little while it looked like they were going to just shut us down altogether.
Listen, I think they turned off some stuff that people realized couldn't have, especially with remote ID. You were going to have an internet capability, and people just say, hey, that's just crazy. We operate in a lot of places commercially where there's no internet whatsoever. So, you know, the only link you have is between your flight controller and the drone. But there is a big effort now to get law enforcement guys up to speed, and they are trying to work with that quite a bit, especially with the new rules. They're really seeking law enforcement participation because the FAA can't keep up with all this stuff.
And they have the hardest airspace on the planet to keep under control. Right? I feel sorry for them. They've got a difficult job. So I'm not going to give them any hard time. I'm just going to go out to the airfields and fly as much as I can. And if it turns into something I can turn into profit-making kind of a venture, then I'll address it at that time. But trying to keep it simple before I turn it into a profession.
It's only going to get more complicated, especially as, you know, once they got remote ID online some of the new flights over people, flights over vehicles, all those kind of things, depending on the category of drone that you've got, then you're going to see the door open up to commercial deliveries. I mean, it's already being done with UPS, I don't think it's going to get any simpler anytime soon. It's only going to get more crowded.
And I'm thinking remote ID is going to be in the form of ADS-B. I think they've already, I mean, because some of the flight controllers that you buy nowadays, I mean, if you don't buy like DJI canned stuff, but if you build your own, they have those as options. ADS-B built-in transceiver so that it can transmit all your ADS-B information and it can receive ADS-B information and use that in its geofencing. Right, if there's another airplane anywhere near it, it can build a geofence and say, you don't go near this airplane. And it won't penetrate that wall around that whoever's squawking on whatever ADS-B transmitter somewhere else. So, yeah, it's going to get better. I think Africa, South Africa, and Australia, they've got companies already making money doing that.
In a briefing we got the other night, the FAA is specifically prohibiting the use of ADS-B for drones. And the reason is, the FAA has to pay so much money for every one of these ADS-B licenses that's out there, and they just don't have the money for it, nor do they want manned aviators trying to pay attention to the bazillion drones that are, you know, below 400 feet and really not a factor for them. So what you're going to have is you'll have to have a modified drone that the company gets a document of compliance, a DOC, from, and or you will have to buy a module, which they say is not going to cost very much money, maybe $20 or $30, that you can put on your commercial 107 or your recreational drone that would have those capabilities in it that will meet the remote ID requirements if the flight controller won't broadcast.
Yeah, that's the better option, I think, because there's a lot of backward compatibility there that take place if you're going to Or, you know, it takes quite a while to crash all the airplanes that are flyable right now and everybody get new ones. And a lot of, you know, more people in the hobby build their own than people buy, you know, canned packages from companies like DJI. So it would take quite a while for the new ones to come through. It'd have to be something you can, and transmitters are so small, so tiny these days that it wouldn't be a weight, I wouldn't think it would be a weight consideration for 90% of all the airplanes out there.
It's going to be a very small a module and, you know, something not much bigger than one of those small lithium batteries that you're going to use, plus whatever the electronics part of it is. They think it'll be certainly, well, who's certain with the FAA, but but under, you know, like under $50, maybe more like $20 to $30 is what they're thinking it's going to be. And then if you're going to fly recreationally, you can move that module over, but you have to go into the FAA database and move you have to re-register or modify the registration for the, you know, because you can go back and forth, but if you're going to fly it just for fun, recreationally, then you can take the module off your commercial and put it on your recreational drone.
I imagine there'll be a lot of options like that, because it's sending out an ID, right? A transmitter's a transmitter. It's got to send out an ID. So it probably has an EEPROM. You can program it for one airplane one day and for another airplane the next day and still be compliant with FAA doing what you said you were going to do with your registered equipment. Anyway, it's a whole new avenue. It's a lot of fun. Well, it's 2:03. I'm getting hungry. I think I'm going to go get some lunch, Jim. Good talking to you, though. Appreciate you jumping in there.
I think the biggest thing is get guys to, especially on the recreational side, get them to go see that new advisory circular they just put out, 95-7B, and it's got all the new stuff in it. And then we're just waiting right now. I checked this morning, and it's not out yet, but we're waiting on the new Part 107 rules to drop. They promise they'll have it out by the 1st of March. And then the advisory circular that goes with that 107-2, it explains all the rules. So we're just waiting on them to do what they said they'd do and put all this new information out by the 1st of March. Have a great lunch. KL4LA Eau Claire.
All right, good talking to you. Hope to do it again real soon. W4DJ, W Clear.